the last pasuk in Chumash Bereishis. That'll be the first start. So let's go a little. Now this is the end of Joseph's life. We'll start here. If you can start recording now, this is the end of Joseph's life. He told everyone not to worry about. In pasuk 24, he instructs them, "I'm about to die. God will surely take notice of you and bring you up from this land to the land that He promised." Next pasuk, they made him swear, "When God has taken notice of you, you shall carry my bones from here." A little further down, all the way to the last verse. That's it, right there. Joseph died at the age of 110. He was embalmed and placed in a coffin in Egypt. So we end the parsha by Yosef telling everyone he wants to have a promissory note that long-term they're going to take him out while being buried in a coffin in Egypt. Okay, now Charles, just so we can compare to the beginning of the parsha, Charles, can you get to the beginning of Parsha Vayechi? Literally the first couple of psukim, we have a contrast here. We have Yaakov commanding Yosef to definitely remove him from the area and not allow him to stay there. He tells him, get out. You're going so fast, I'll give you a headache like that. Hold on. It is 47:28. Chapter 47, verse 28. It's actually 29, but fine. 28:29. It says, his days are coming when the time approaches Israel to die. He summoned his son, Yosef, and he said to him, do me a favor, place a hand under my thighs, and place me seven. Do not bury me in Egypt. So Charles is doing a great job already, Charles. Let's go to Rashi for a second, please. And we're going to show how on this Rashi, he quotes three potential reasons why Yaakov wanted to hightail out of there as a non-alive person. Hold on, I'm blocking the Rashis with the screen of the pictures of people here. Put it on that side. Okay, so you're in Rashi on 28. We have to go to the next pasuk. Right here. But because this is why I do not bury me in Egypt. Rashi's going to hand. We're going to learn the easiest interpretation that there are three reasons here. It's really not so clear if this is three reasons or two reasons, but we're going to go with the three. Because it's soil. Oh, I knew that didn't make sense. Its soil will ultimately become lice, which would swarm beneath my body. Step one is it's going to become lice. He doesn't want to be affected by lice. Okay. Obviously, if anyone has any memory whatsoever, this should potentially not affect Joseph. Why? Because as we just said, Joseph was buried in a casket in Egypt. So it could be to say that although normally Jews are not necessarily always buried in caskets as far as Jewish law, when we deal with the country law, we make exceptions, obviously. But since the basic law is to be buried without a casket, so Yaakov would have been more concerned potentially for the lice, while Yosef buried in Egypt inside a coffin potentially would have avoided the issue of lice. That would be step number one, to avoid that issue. Second one is, further, those who die outside the land of Israel will not live again at the resurrection except after the pain caused by the body rolling through underground passages until he reached the Holy Land. So that means that people have a concept of buried in Israel because they feel that whatever this Kabbalistic concept is, Yosef avoided that problem as well. Because Yosef told him, listen, I know you're burying me in Egypt, but that's not a long-term plan. That's a short-term plan in the scheme of history. It's only going to be a couple hundred years. I don't plan on being, it's even less than that. Less than a couple hundred years. I don't plan on being it too long. And therefore, he's avoiding that problem because by the time the resurrection was going to come, he was not planning on being there. So the second problem that Yaakov was saying, get me out of here, Yosef did not have an issue with. Third issue, and another reason, here, by the way, this is where it comes from. Here Rashi says, and another reason. It seems like one and two, he only said further, just in case anyone wants to delve into that. Barak, you could delve into that, why Rashi doesn't say another reason. That's why those first two might really be one reason, one, but that's not for tonight. Another reason is that the Egyptians should not make me, my corpse, my tone, an object of idolatrous worship. Yaakov didn't want to be considered an idol. He didn't want to be a cause of idolatry. And therefore, he said, get me out of here. I don't want to be the place where everyone's going to go pray. Yosef, this is, by the way, Rosen, first time I thought of you, because I thought you'd like this idea, that Yosef did not have this issue, because Yosef knew that there was going to be a decree against the Jews in the land of Egypt, and therefore they were going to immediately forget all of Yosef and that he had done. They were not going to make an idol out of Yosef. They were looking to really make the Jews look bad. So as far as all three of these reasons, on some level, Yosef did not command them. Now, obviously, by the way, as a simple interpretation, Yosef had the ability to take Yaakov out of Egypt, and no one had the ability to take Yosef out of Egypt. That's really, if you want to read it as simple interpretation as can be, it's just a reality. Yaakov had the ability to get out because Yosef was in charge. Yosef outlived him. Yosef was a viceroy, so he was able to get him out, while no one would have been able to take Yosef out. That is true in the practical sense of dealing with the Egyptian monarchy. But we're discussing, besides the monarchy issues, what's going on? What about the fears that Yaakov had that did not carry carry on into Yosef. So here we have now Rashi quoting again either two or three reasons, and we explained ourselves why these two or three reasons are really not relevant toward Yosef itself. Again, the lice would not be effective if you have a casket. He was not planning on staying there long term, and he realized right beforehand how bad this was going to get, and therefore he said, listen, they're not going to make me into an idol because they're going to erase all of my accomplishments that I had done, and therefore there's nothing to worry about that. So all three reasons Yaakov gave to get out, Yosef had no issues. Yes.
Rabbi.
While I'm doing it, Charles, scroll to the end again, to the last verse.
Rabbi.
Yes.
Number three, what you said, right. I don't think computes because the Jews weren't enslaved until the last of the brothers died. Since Yosef was one of the earlier ones to die, the whole generation would have been there, and they would have, could very easily have been worshipped as an under idolatrous worship
for the short term. The
number of years it would be until they were actually enslaved.
You for the short term.
Yeah.
Okay. Not bad. Definitely for the short term might have been a problem. I have to think that one through. Offhand, it sounds good. Have to think it through. You have to know it how fast. As we've discussed, there's been different levels of the slavery, how it went further down. I'm not sure at what point they forgot Yosef. So it makes sense what you're saying if we learn the fact that they forgot Yosef only later on. But I'm not sure. Could they forgot Yosef immediately? I have to think that through.
I don't think so. I think it would have made sense that there would have been a change in dynasty in Egypt.
Not bad.
It says a new pharaoh came in.
Correct. The beginning of next week. Now, I don't know how much later that pharaoh was. That pharaoh might have been, I'm making this up really on the spot. That pharaoh might have been 2 weeks after Joseph died. I don't think so. I happen not to think so. I'm just saying it might have been.
No. It would appear that at Joseph's death,
it was still good.
Same administration would have been there and they could readily have made it an idol, but they could have done the same thing with him in a coffin.
Right. No, we're talking about him getting out of Egypt. That was the issue. If you take the body out of Egypt, then you're less worried about a pilgrimage becoming
Yes, but he left the body there.
So you were saying he left the body. Why was he not afraid? So I'm saying he wasn't afraid because the Egyptians would immediately get about him. Therefore, they wouldn't make him into an idol. You're saying not immediately, it would have taken time.
Not only would it take a change in administration.
Right, correct.
Change in the pharaoh.
So you're saying because of that third reason, Yosef should have been a little bit concerned.
Yes.
Okay. I got to think it through. I like it. Okay. Back to the pasuk, Charles. Now, clearly, I don't even know if we need the pasuk for this. Clearly, Yosef is requesting to stay here. Now, again, it could be a lack of options, but he's requesting to stay here. So I found a fascinating Torah. Charles, to the public screen, I'll talk about the Torah. But the fact is this. There is a sefer called Tzoror HaMor. Torah Amar is something I don't know, Charles, if I mentioned recently in any of the classes, that the Torah Amar was a safer. He was evicted in the 1492 from Spain. And one of the great treasure hunts of all time is that he wrote in the introduction to his safer that all of his writings were lost on his being kicked out into exile. And he was writing the safer over from memory while he was hanging out in a certain area before he traveled to the next town. And he rewrote the entire book from memory, but he said he had many more books and manuscript form that he buried, and he actually gives a location. It is Barak. He actually gives a location where it should be, somewhere in Spain under a certain tree that has never been found. But the person who finds that would save the planet, probably. But that thing is gone. But the Torah Amar is a very fascinating sefer, again, written late 1400s, early 1500s. And he says a fascinating idea. Now, we've discussed in the past in this class, there are reasons and merits why the Jews were able to survive the exile. Now, the famous quote, as I've said in this class many times, is not necessarily accurate. The famous quote is that they did not change three things. They did not change their clothing. They did not change their names. They did not change their language. That is not actually a quote in any single location from an earlier source. It's really, there are different quotations that are similar, and somewhere along the line, that quotation, I guess it rhymes better, but I'm not saying that everything in Judaism is a reason. And we have a different quote. The quotes we have is that they did not change their name. They did not change their language. And then it says other things. One of them is they were not snitches. And if you remember what we have a tremendous article we once gave relevant to Dustin Vavirin being snitches. If anyone reminds me later, Joey, if you can remind me later, I'll send you one of the greatest classes I've ever gave on a Thursday night class of the greatest secret ever told. How Dustin Vavirin let out. I don't know if anyone knows what I'm talking about, but okay. So they weren't snitches, and they didn't fall to immorality. That's one of the famous Midrashim. Four reasons, not the original three, two of the original three didn't change their name, didn't change their language. And then we added on two. They did not become snitches and they did not fall in the area of immorality. In fact, the Chumash says that only one female seemed to have strayed. And that's what later on that child curses out Moshe Rabbeinu, but it means in the entire nation, even though it's hard to imagine, obviously it was a special blessing from God during this exile, even though they had complete control, and they were enslaved, and not one slave, according to what we once studied in a different class years ago, that not one slave escaped from Egypt over the 200 years, which sounds insane, but no one escaped, no matter how bad it was for the Jews. With no escaping, it seems like there was no immorality occurring. There was no male Egyptians or female Egyptians taking advantage of their Jewish slaves. And even though we know, thankfully to a large degree, about 75 years ago, the Nazis, Yimach Shemayim, also made a concept that they should not consort, whatever the word is, with the Jewish prisoners. And overall, thankfully, for a blessing to us, it was overall kept, but obviously not 100% kept. But that is a blessing when we're not being forced to do things with non-Jewish things. And here, it says there was no immorality except for that one woman. There was no morality across the board. And again, no snitches. The proof of the no snitches, if you remember, Charles, was that when the Jews were telling the Egyptians were going to leave in 3 days, they knew they were not leaving in 3 days. And yet the Egyptians were still convinced it was a three-day journey. If you remember that conversation, old Barak from high school, how the Egyptians were convinced it was a three-day journey. It wasn't. So the Jews had four tremendous attributes that helped them merit leaving Egypt, and God still protected them. Now, this Omar says an amazing thing. I'll tell you, I had not seen this, never heard of it until literally a couple days ago. And I'm flying off the shelves for this one because it really, really, really is good. Now, it says like this. He wants to say that the reason why, I'm paraphrasing, so I don't want to quote him fully as saying that. So it's my Americanized version of what he's saying. I want to be clear. What he is saying is that the fact is that Yosef wanted to stay in Egypt, not that he had a choice, no choice, not that he could avoid the three things of the lice and stuff like that, but he wanted to stay in Egypt because Yosef realized that his battle in Egypt, when he got there, was exactly facing these four things we'll see in a second. He was meritorious in surviving these four tests, and he instilled in the Jewish nation the ability for them to withstand these four tests while staying in Egypt, which would be the merit for them to be redeemed in a couple hundred years. And therefore he said, you know what? Keep me here. Remind me where I am. Remind you guys that I'm here. I beat the test. You could beat the test. And when you guys are about to go, I'm going to be there with you to go. And if you remember correctly, we once spoke about it, Rashi. Remember correctly that when the Jews were about to reach the sea before it split, there's a medrash that says the sea said, I'm not splitting. I don't have to split. My job is to flow. Water's job is to flow. And I don't care what you say. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, listen, but God told me to split you. And he said, well, then take it up with God because God told me to flow. And it says that the sea was fighting Moshe Rabbeinu. And one of the Midrashim say that as soon as it saw the casket, as we're about to discuss tonight, the casket of Joseph, it decided, okay, to split. One of the explanations we're giving right now is based on what we just said. Since Joseph survived the four things we'll discuss in a second, the four merits, he gave it on to the Jews. The Jews were now worthy of leaving. The Jews were worthy of leaving. Therefore, they got to the river and they were able to split the river. When were the four going? So it's very simple. Very simple. First one is not changing. Actually, Charles, let's show it to you, a fascinating idea, Charles. If you can go to in the Chumash. Yeah, 41:45. Go to verse 45, Charles, please, in that chapter. We're going to go through now the four things to see how it didn't change. Here it is, 45. You just do there. Yes, here it says, and Paroi gave Yosef the name Tzafnas Panech, and he gave him for a wife Asnas. So Paroi changed Yosef's name. Obviously, the Torah is telling us this has important value to us. It wouldn't be telling us something that's just randomly there. What does the next pasuk say? Astoundingly, Yosef was 30 years old when he entered the service of Paroi. Amazing. You know what that means? That means no matter what was going on in Paroi's version, you know how many times it says Tzafnas Panech in the Torah? One time. Paroi named him Tzafnas Panech. But every other time you're going to hear it, the Torah reverts back to Yosef because Yosef kept his name and continued to refer to himself as Yosef. And therefore, as the name Yosef, he had the first merit of not changing his name. That's an easy one, right? Now, as far as the language goes, as far as the language, we know that, not for now, inside, it's a Rashi, so I have to look where it is, that Yosef Paroi was a master, and he knew 70 languages. And when he met Yosef, Yosef taught him a 71st language of Hebrew, right? So Yosef knew one more language of Hebrew. And it's brought down that Yosef pretended not to know Hebrew when he spoke to the brothers in the beginning, but then he spoke to them in Hebrew and he revealed himself. Because the Hebrew language, even though he was out of commission of speaking it for X amount of decades, he still remained the language in front of him. So here we have Yosef not giving up on his name. We have Yosef not giving up on the language. Number three, Tzvara Amar. Rosen, tell me you're going to love this one. We've discussed this many times, Rosen. What is the reason? Charles can go to the public screen, by the way. Now I'm thinking about it. So we get to the next one. What is the reason, what we've discussed many times, why Yosef never went back and told his father, I am alive? Rosen's answer is that Yosef's opinion was, if he sends back a message saying that I am Yosef, your son, and I am here, Yaakov would gain back his son, but he would lose 10 others. Rosen, you remember ever saying that to me?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. That is a great reason. And I'm not, that is a real reason, by the way. But to be fascinating to know, the Tzvara Amar, late 1400s, he writes that the reason why Yosef did not send the message home was, as Charles says, snitches get stitches. So even though one of the merits needed by the Jews for the 200 years to get out of Egypt was not to be a snitch, one of the reasons, now that doesn't mean Rosen's wrong, by the way. First of all, it could be multiple reasons, it could be the same reason. The snitching would cause a terrible effect on Yaakov as well. But Yosef himself did not snitch, which he might have wanted to, but he didn't. So the third factor in the game that we're discussing here of the merits of the Jews in the land of Egypt, the merits that Joseph began to teach them how he survived in Egypt, here goes a third one as well. He was not a snitch as well. And the fourth one really takes no brains whatsoever, the lack of immorality when Yosef faced one of the greatest challenges in the history of the world, literally the history of the world, that he was given a prophetic vision that he was going to have children from this woman in front of him. He knew, if we discussed this once years ago, Rose, and I'd be very impressed if you remember this, that we discussed, maybe even you with your Charles as well. We discussed years ago that Potiphar and his wife might have not been married according to law, and therefore Yosef was not even considered cheating with a married woman. She was not considered married according to law. So he had a prophecy, he's going to have kids with this woman. The woman was telling him, let's do it because I had the same prophecy. So clearly the prophecy was true. And she was not considered a married woman according to some laws. And Yosef was there facing the situation and he wasn't sure and he was half giving in, but at the end he held back. Immorality saved him. So because of the fact that Yosef won all four tests, he said, listen, do me a favor. Keep me in Egypt. You know why? Let the Jews realize that I won all four tests. Let the Jews realize that they themselves can win all four tests. And let them know one thing, by the way, because it goes in a full circle. If they keep all four tests, they will merit taking my bones outside of Egypt, because we will make the redemption as long as everyone keeps to reminding themselves that I am around. Okay, now we're going to get to the next thing. Back to the screen one more time, Charles, for the last pasuk of the Torah. Something we've mentioned, the Hasidish idea. We've been mentioning it more recently because slowly. So now the last pasuk says, now we've discussed a very Kabbalistic concept that's really brought down by many of the Hasidic Sfarim. From Tzadok HaKoyen, as from the great Hasidic people in the last 150 years, he says this many times. He says something we know. Tell me if you can finish the statement, Barak. The first time a word appears in the Torah is the truest form of what it is. First time a letter appears in the Torah. That's a Kabbalistic Hasidic idea. So if you want to know what the true essence of a bez is, look at the word Bereshis, why it's placed in the word over there. And that's how it goes with every letter, every root word, every form of word. That's how we do it. Now, this is amazing. Charles, you got that pen on you? You could circle. Excellent, Charles. Circle the second to the last word in this chumash, by the way. As soon as the guy reads these words, you're going to scream, chazak, chazak, eat a chocolate cake. What happens here? This word, ba'aron. So in English, what did they put it on? They put it as a coffin, correct? Now I'm going to ask you a trick question to the crowd here. Ashi, you're the one under me on the screen. I'm asking you, when you read the word Aaron, Ashi, what does the word Aaron mean to you? What comes to mind?
The Aaron in the Mishkan.
Yes. Now I'm going to ask you another question, Ashi. We have you on the spot here. So the word Aaron, the Ark, in the Torah, if you had a guess, how many times it says Aaron referring to Ark as opposed to Aaron referring to coffin? Charles has it right. Shockingly enough, by the way, the only time the Torah in the Tanakh that it says Aaron might be one of the time in Navi, but in the five books for sure of Moses, the only time the word Aaron appears to mean a casket or a coffin is right here. Every other time you have the word Aaron, you're going to think like the boys just did, that it means to an ark. It does not mean to a casket. This is a very, very strange idea. Why would the Torah have used a word? Again, no happenstance in Judaism. We don't believe in that stuff. It's a very strange idea that the word used to hold the luchos, the ark, is used here. Now, Charles, I should have told you this earlier. Can we go to the Gemara, Talmud, Sota, 13a? Okay, right there. I got the picture of the people again on the way. Hold on. Move this out of the way. Right there. all of the years that the Jewish people were in the wilderness, that's when they were traveling, these two arcs, obviously we're talking about the Ark of Joseph right here. We want to scroll up one more paragraph to see where it says it. I think it's pretty obvious, right? This is our thing. Here it is. The Gemara now presents the version of where Yosef was buried. That's after he came back, not for us. But here, okay, this is how they found the casket. We'll get to that maybe in a few weeks now. So here we're discussing the Ark of Joseph. Now, Charles, go back down. And it says here, all of the years the Jewish people were in the wilderness, these two arcs, one, a casket. What is called in the other? What is called in the other place? A casket or a coffin? I don't know why they changed. Safari switched up. Safari made a switch. I don't know why. Same word in Hebrew. I don't know why Safari is switching it. I don't know if there is a difference between casket and coffin, by the way. One, a casket of a dead man, Joseph. And one, the Ark with a capital A. Charles, did you read a capital A before? Ark of the Divine Presence, the Ark of the Covenant. We're traveling together. And passerby, that's a very strange thing, the passerby, who are they? Would say, what is the nature of these two arcs? I don't know why now it gets lowercase. I don't know. You have to ask my wife. They said to them, one is of a dead person and one is of the Divine Presence. The passerby would ask, and in what way is the man of the dead person to travel with the Divine Presence? They said in response, perfect. This one, the deceased Joseph, fulfilled all that is written in this. Therefore, it is fitting that the two arcs should lie side by side. So here we have an amazing thing. Yes, we'll get to the second Barak. Here we have not only do we have the word here used for the first time in the end of our parsha, it used the word aroin for meaning casket or coffin, which normally if I would ask you on a quiz, a pop quiz on Hafter, what does the word aroin mean? Probably nobody would say coffin or casket. They would all say the ark. And here we have the lone location, and we added on, maybe we're not going to be able to get to it tonight, the first location of the word aroin does not actually mean ark. It means a coffin of a thing. So now we're saying not only is this a random thing, we're seeing that in the Talmudic passage, they're saying these two arcs were placed next to each other for a serious concept. Go to the public screen. Now we're going to come up with an idea that's extremely important here. So we have now Yosef being buried, and now we see... Should we do that now? Actually, yeah, Charles, you have the Gemara site open. Let's go to the page before where he was buried, Joseph. So it says it was a question of where Yosef was, where they placed him. Egyptians decided, they were nervous. They realized.
Didn't they put him in a river?
Yes, let's see. Let's go back up a little bit. Right there, let's read it. The Gemara now presents a different version of where Yosef was buried. Rav Nosson says Yosef was buried in a crypt of kings. Moses went and stood by the crypt of kings and said, Yosef, the time has arrived. Hold on, bless you, the Kadosh saying that I will redeem you. And if not, it would be a couple paragraphs for what Ashi said. There's a debate if he was buried as in the Nile itself. Probably here, yeah. Let's see. The Gemara asks, where did Moshe, our teacher, know where Yosef was buried? The sages say, Sarach, the daughter of Asher, remains from that generation that initially descended to Egypt with Yaakov. Moses went there and said, do you know anything about where Yosef is buried? She said, yeah. The Egyptians, by the way, the Egyptians fastened a metal casket of him and set it in the Nile River so that it's water would be blessed. Moshe went and stood on the bank of the Nile, and he said, it's time for you to come out. And therefore, Yosef came out. Correct? Now, the Gemara makes it sound like it was a positive. I'm going to tell you something amazing. Why did the Egyptians choose the water? Yes, Ashi. Go to the public screen, Charles.
Isn't it a midrash that the Egyptians didn't want Moshe? They didn't want the Jews to find Yosef.
Excellent.
Bones, so they purposely threw him in the Nile. So you could say it's not even an argument. Maybe he was originally first buried in the king's crypt or whatever, and then they took him and they threw him in the Nile.
Beautiful. That was a great one. Actually, no, really, really, very good. Very good. So, yes, and they wanted them not to find. Now, Hubner came up with his own idea. Everyone can tell me if you do like it, by the way, that it's amazing. You know why they chose the Nile? That's a good hiding place. But I'll tell you why. Because Joseph was telling the Jews from the Pesuk, and we don't have in front of us again right now, you don't have to go back, Charles, it's fine. Joseph was telling, listen, guys, stick around. According to what we're saying, he's telling them, know where I am, follow my lead, as they say, follow my lead, let me lead you to the promised land, literally. Follow my lead in surviving these four tests, and then you'll be worthy of taking my bones out and going to Israel. And the Egyptians are like, wait a second, we don't want that. You know what we're going to do? We're going to hide Joseph, his body, as Ashi said, to make sure they're not going to find him. To make sure they're not going to know where he is. Now, if you were to find him to the ultimate place, he's talking about when the Jews are going to be redeemed, correct? Was that the first words you read tonight? Does anyone remember that? Or we should go check the original Safari in Vayechi. What he said is, you guys will be redeemed. There will be a redeemer. And then don't forget about me, correct? Now, if you're an Egyptian, who we, as said many times, are extremely talented people, they have abilities to read the future. They have the abilities in general to interpret dreams. They have the ability to mimic some of the plagues. These aren't minor leaguers here. These are major leaguers. So if you ever tell the Egyptian guy right now, listen, we got to literally bury the evidence in a place where we don't want the Jews to get it. So I'll tell you what the Egyptians are thinking. They're thinking like this. We know that the Redeemer of the Jews, you know what his kryptonite is? Right. So Superman has a kryptonite that he cannot survive. Moshe Rabbeinu, if we could use such a phrase, has his kryptonite as well. What is Moshe Rabbeinu's kryptonite? What did the people in Egypt say? We know, Moshe, you're going to fail with this element.
Water.
Water. So if what you're going to do is you're going to take Joseph, who's going to be helping them redeem. You know what I'm going to tell him? I'm going to put him into the bottom of the river. Joseph, if you're the redeemer now, you're in your kryptonite. And if Moshe wants to come get you, he can't go near the water. Ultimate victory, by the way. Ultimate victory. Hide the guy in the water, and therefore that he can't get out at all. That was the plan by the Egyptians, to bury him in Egypt. Now, Charles, look at the pasuk for a second. In the last pasuk again. It's a funny word here. This word, Charles, circle. We did the second to the last word. Now circle the third to the last word. That word, let's see what they... Right. Yeah. Vayisem. That vayisem. Anyone can look at the word and say right away, this is spelled very strangely. There is an extra yud there. And here we're saying that he placed it. That means placed. But it's a weird thing. That is a thing that many of the commentators are going to discuss. The language of it. Vayisem. And he was embalmed and placed. Has Hashem's name. But in Hebrew, it really means, by the way, it's almost as if he says he placed himself. Just the vowelization of this word. And either way, it has two yuds, which means they want to say it means two placements. One, he was placed where Yosef wanted to be placed. And then the Egyptians came along and said, no, we got a better idea. We're going to bury him deep in the water. We're going to make sure he's not seeing the light of day. Now, why was this a tremendous blessing? The Egyptians had it all planned out. We're going to take Joseph. We're going to put him in the deep waters to avoid the problem. But you know what landed out happening? Charles, we'll get to a different Talmudic passage to make this come full circle to an incredible class, I might add. Incredible class. Go to the Gemara Sanhedrin 67b. What it says here is, which while you're doing it, is that when it comes to magic, perfect, that's the paragraph. The Gemara relates, Ze'iri happened to come to Alexandria of Egypt. Again, Egypt again, guys. He bought a donkey. Wait, the people's faces are in the way again. He bought a donkey. When he was about to give it water to drink, the magic thawed. When the donkey touched the water, and it was revealed that it was not a donkey, and it turned into a plank of a bridge. Obviously, very deep stuff. The ones who sold it to him said, if you were not Ze'iri, a distinguished person, we would not refund you the money for the donkey. Is there anyone who buys an item here and doesn't examine if it's at first with water? Examine the donkey to see if it's a real donkey with water? Here goes the crucial words. Since sorcery was widespread there, anyone who bought an item examined it in order to find out if it was affected by sorcery. And if one did not examine an acquired item by exposing it to water, and it turned out to be under a spell, he suffered a loss. Now, the reason why, okay, I don't remember if that was right before or right afterward. The reason why is because you see from this open Gemara here that sorcery and magic cannot be used by water. Water is, although it might be the kryptonite, as Marcy said correctly to Moshe Rabbeinu, water is also has the ability to withstand all magic, negative, not wishes, I don't know what they call it, spells. All magic spells can be withstand with water. So it's an interesting thing. Charles to the public screen. I'll tell you something fascinating. There's a Kabbalistic concept that prophecy, a certain type of prophecy, cannot be experienced when not in Israel proper. And the Gemara brings down, in many cases, the exceptions. But one exception they bring down based on Sukkim is that if someone is standing in the contaminated land of Chutz Laretz, he can't receive prophecy. But if he moves on to the water is separate from the land. We do not consider any large bodies of water to be considered part of that land place. So even though we are the first 50 miles in American law, I don't know what it is, might be considered American water. If you go offshore in Jewish law, as soon as you get to the water, you're not part of American soil anymore. And therefore, even though normally God will not give prophecy when someone's standing in a foreign country outside of Israel, but if he's standing in water on a boat, then he can get it. So really, on one hand, it was amazing. The Egyptians had a great idea. We're going to put this guy into kryptonite, and we're going to destroy him. We're going to destroy that Yosef could never get out. What they lost, and they didn't realize is that it was a blessing for Joseph and his body. Because Joseph and his body didn't want to stay in a contaminated land. They were concerned. Yaakov gave three reasons why he was concerned. Yosef had no choice, but he was also a little bit concerned. But you know what Yosef pulled off? They put him into the water, which meant he was in a pure place. And that was a good thing for Joseph. So once again, which we could see over the next few weeks maybe, as the Egyptians tried to do bad things to the Jews, and many plans they had to negatively affect the Jews, it happened to work out as a boomerang, just like the story of Purim, and most of the stuff is coming along with everybody. There's something in Harry Potter about water?
Breaks incantations.
That's where she probably got it from. But okay, so there is an idea that the water can't do. So again, the point of tonight's lesson is, I don't know what the point was anymore. We have to realize the difference between Yaakov and Yosef. That's number one. Difference between Yaakov and Yosef. We have to know about one being buried in Egypt, one not being buried in Egypt. We have to understand that although we have the word Aron here, which is the first time, which might be protected for lice, but it also means that he was placed into an Aron, which represents a positive of being similar to the Ark. We also have to know that there was a kryptonite going on and the Egyptians meant negative. And throughout the story of the years in the exile, although the Egyptians usually meant negative, many, many times it turned out that what they thought was going to be a negative for the Jews landed up being an extreme positive for the Jews. Who had his hand up there? Ashi, go.
Yeah, so I wanted to mention, followed by a question. It was just interesting because when Moshe needed to find Yosef's body, he put in like on a stone he threw into the water, a stone that said Ale Shor.
Yes.
It's like rise ox, which is really interesting because it represents the whole, what Yosef represents, Mashiach ben Yosef, like an ox, the physical needs and everything, but that's what an ox represents. But I just had a question. You were saying that Moshe, his kryptonite's water. Why does kryptonite be water if that's what he kind of represents? They say Ein Maim Ela Torah, and Moshe connects the lower waters with the higher waters because that's where he put in the basket.
But we do see what they meant by the kryptonite was that they realized that Moshe's, I'm going to put the word downfall, and I like that word, downfall was when he hit the rock to create the water. That's what they meant. That's how it began. The Egyptian magicians noticed that Moshe Ben's downfall was that. Rosen, I would give you, seriously, if even in Florida, I would give you a virtual hug from the distance if you remember this. And otherwise, I'll go back to in a couple weeks, Rosen. Do you remember we discussed years? This is literally 15 years ago, Rosen. We discussed the fact that the reason why Moshe's mother put him into the water was because she was hoping if he was in a basket within the water, she could fulfill the negative prophecy of him being destroyed by water and then pull him out and save him.
With Uznath, that was Dina's daughter, I think, according to
Saul.
Right.
That was Yosef's wife. She was a stepdaughter of Potiphar. When it says he married the daughter, it means a stepdaughter, and he really married a Jewish person. He married a Jewish person.
Because I think it was from Dina and Shechem, but why?
Correct.
So my question is, why did Yaakov send her away?
Excellent. So the simple interpretation was, but this is not a clear good one, but the simple interpretation was that Yaakov felt that having the child from that union, which was a violation of everything, having her hang around that group that was changing the world forever, the Shvatim, was not a positive thing. And subconsciously, he knew prophetically he had to send her somewhere else to fulfill her task. And he sent her to Egypt, not realizing, and he gave her a medallion. He gave, that's the word medallion. He gave her a medallion, and he told her that when the time comes to get married, you give the person a medallion, you'll get married. And when Joseph became viceroy in Egypt, people were all giving different things to him, as we said. So what happened was that each person throws different things. So she decided the time to get married, and she threw the amulet. And it reached Yosef, and he realized, okay, that's the person I'm going to marry, because he realized the Shem Hashem and stuff like that, and then he married her. So yes, she was a stepdaughter, and she was Jewish. She also married a Jew. That's why Ephraim and Asher come out Jewish, according to the way many Midrashim learn.
Yeah, it was like one of Yaakov's concerns also, like if he married, if this kid
Ephraim
and Asher were Jewish. He'd like
correct, because he wasn't sure yet. Excellent. Excellent. Right. That was also the ceremony and stuff like that.
Why would it matter if Yosef married a Jew? Moshe himself didn't marry a Jew.
Right.
He could have converted. So Osnath could have converted.
Correct. The technicality would be Amosh as well. Was there a potential to do conversion in that area? And it was more of a, you want to create the nation right now. You want to make Ephraim and Manasseh into the equal level of the Shvatim. Then we need a higher standard, but not a bad answer. Okay, we're wishing everyone a great night.